Greetings. Welcome to Confessing the Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature part two of my interview with bassist, singer, songwriter, producer, recording artist, member of the Kinsey Report and Funky Mojo Daddy, and recent inductee into the Chicago Blues Hall of Fame, Mr. Kenny Kinsey. Let's roll! So, Kenny, it seems like the bass player is the unsung hero of the band. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you hear that cliche, you know, only time you miss the bass player is when you don't hear him no more and stuff, you know. So
if you're
on the bandstand and all of a sudden the bass stop, that's when everybody look around and
right.
stuff. Like, but, you know, you got two guitar players and one of the guitar players stop to do something, you know, keep on going and stuff.
Right.
But the bass player drop out, you know. Like, oh boy, what's wrong? Yeah, what happened?
You mentioned Paul McCartney playing bass and singing. How about singing? What are your thoughts about singing, whether in the Kinseys or Mojo Daddy?
Well, I started really singing. My dad used to tell me and Ralph that y'all better start singing. He told us this years ago that you better start singing.
Okay.
And I don't know if he saw something in, you know, coming down the line or whatever, but he just always, well, we just always, you know, we a family, you know, Donald's the lead singer and stuff, you know. But I started trying to sing because I had to start trying to sing. You know, it was during a period in time, and we had some issues in the band and stuff. And you know, if somebody's running late or not showing up, for whatever reason, the club owner would always come to me, and that's, you know, my dad kind of like, when he was active, really active, he was the business guy.
Sure.
And I was with him on the road until, you know, we got big enough for me to have my own room or whatever. I roomed with him, so I knew the business from him. And dealing with the club owners, he often would ask me to come along with him or whatever in the office at the end of the night. And so it got to the point. Well, you just go handle it. And
yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I got, you know, to know the club owners and whatever. And so when things would happen to where, you know, somebody was running late or didn't show up, it's like, Kenny, what y'all going to do? So, you know, I'm like, I knew I sounded awful at the time, but I said, hey, man, we got to do this show.
Sure.
You know, we got to do it.
Show must go on.
Yeah, show must go on. But that was a lesson, you know, well learned. I should have been more prepared because my dad had told me.
Right.
But, you know, I just kind of got thrown in and made it work. You know, you just kind of like recall songs that you've been hearing all your life, and you just try to make it work. You know, so I didn't seek out to try to, you know, sing the, you know, as I'm singing. I'm by front, not a front man. Try to handle a whole night by myself. But it's like I said earlier, you know, you got to have a balance. You got to have a balance. And everything that I do from here on, I want to make sure I have a balance and not put everything on one man, because if it's the wrong guy, that's when you get into ego problems. Well, y'all can't do nothing without me.
Sure.
You know, all the focus is on me. It's, you know, we just a one dimensional band and all that kind of stuff. So I've since that time, I've always tried to like have more input than just standing in the back playing bass, because you run into problems like that. Not that issues may come up in the band, but it's just always that chance of ego playing into the band. And once it gets one-dimensional like that, Dan's like, you know, it's like one person feel like they got more control and you can't do anything without me syndrome, like, pops in. You know, you hear that all the time, the front man guitar player syndrome and stuff. So.
Well, it sounds like the format of the Funky Mojo Daddy is kind of like that. Like you said, it's kind of like a team and everybody has different parts and everybody sings and everybody plays.
Right.
So you're kind of have that working for you.
Yeah. And it works out and stuff, you know, and really the load is not on really one particular person. It's different styles. Some people like, you know, the soul, you know, Ryan's singing. He's a good, you know, young soulful singer and stuff. I do more of the bluesy stuff. Jeff does some of the rock stuff. So in the course of the night, everybody get a little bit of everything and stuff, you know. So it works out. But that's kind of what propelled me and Ralph to start singing, is that it was basically out of necessity and the show must go on.
Right.
It was bad that it happened like that. But at the same time, it was growth. And you just kind of, you know, you look at sometime, you know, experience that you didn't want to really have, but then you look at, what's the good side of this?
Sure. It sounds like your father kind of prepared you for that.
Yeah.
Being aware of trying to do some singing and also handling the business.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm not going to be here.
Right.
So,
yeah. You know. I definitely got my business side of things from him.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. I give him all the credit for that. And then, like I said, just, you know, trying to sing, and it's for me, it's like, you know, it's a different monkey trying to play bass and sing, and I'm not gonna never, you know, sacrifice, because that's my bread and butter is being a solid bass player.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna sacrifice the groove in order to try to sing. And, you know, singing blues, you got to, you know, it's an expressive thing too. So you can't get too caught up, at least I can't, and trying to be, you know, too B.B. King-ish, you know, stylish and hold the groove down.
Sure.
Something, and you're going to lose something, you know. So I have to pick and choose what songs that's comfortable for me that I can, you know, hold down and sing and hopefully be expressive and soulful with it.
Thank you.
Well, you know, talking about the Kinsey Report and performing with your brothers, I've always found certain bands of brothers, for instance, like the Neville Brothers, there's a certain magic when those guys get together and play and sing, or even like the rock and roll, like the Everly Brothers. Mm-hmm. I mean, when those two guys start singing, it's like two birds, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, do you find performing with your brothers versus performing with other bands that there's just a different feeling or dynamic, intensity, magic or something?
Oh, yeah. Now, when we, when the brothers are on, there's nothing like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just, but that's, I think that's the magic of music is that, you know, every night is not going to be a great magical night with anybody. But when it is, though, it is magical. And people, you know, it's like sometimes, you know, everybody wants to rehearse and stay tight. But sometimes we don't always rehearse.
right.
And, you know, it's like, okay, man, we ain't rehearsed. But sometimes the unrehearsed shows end up being some of the best shows because then, you know, some spontaneity come into the mix. And, you know, it's sometimes it's like, man, we should have recorded that.
Yeah.
You know.
And we missed that.
You know. And it's because it's not rehearsed. And a lot of times, you know, we haven't done a set list to where we followed. I mean, you know, I got a list of songs of all our songs that some from time to time I put on my amp so that if we like, wow, what are we going to do next? I got the songs right there.
Yeah.
We not like, you know, big long pause in between, you know, songs. But we rarely now, you know, have a set list of what we're going to do. We got an idea of what we're going to start out with because that's just kind of our warming up songs.
Yeah.
And after that, you just kind of feel off the crowd and see where the crowd is going. You know, if it's a night where, you know, people seem like they're ready to have a good time and dance, then we kind of feed that. And if it's a quiet show, where if it's more of a concert and people, then we do one of them quiet blues songs where you can, you know, just step off the mic and sing and, you know, and play it like that.
A jealous wife, he fooled around and she took his life. They put her away deep in a dark dungeon where the sun don't ever shine. Take my advice, watch your life. Take my advice, you better think twice, or they'll put you away where the sun don't never shine.
That's the good thing with music, man. And that's why live music in the end is going to always trump anything else, because you never know when that, you know, you hear it all the time. You know, man, I went and saw them that night, man. It was just unbelievable.
Sure.
And you can, you know, a year from now, you can go see, man, I don't know what was wrong. You know, the sound was off. You know, but that's the magic of music.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's nights you think, man, we're killing it, and the crowd said, man, you guys didn't sound that good tonight, or the opposite.
Right.
You know, you never can tell.
You never can tell.
So, in addition to playing with your brothers and Funky Mojo Daddy, mm-hmm. you also perform with guys like Wayne Baker Brooks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what's that like working with Wayne?
He's a good guy, man. He's also, in addition to performing, he doesn't perform that much, but he does a lot of things behind the scenes. And organize a lot of different events, but he's got some good material. He's in the process of this upcoming year, I believe, releasing a CD. And speaking with him, I got a show coming up with him Saturday at Buddy Guy's Legends. So I'll be backing him up this Saturday at Buddy Guy's.
Great.
But yeah, no, I've been playing with Wayne on and off for over the last 10 years. I did some tours with him over in Europe, and we've toured all over the country. But once again, he's one like us that chooses not to, you know, get in the van and just hump up and down the road, and he just kind of pick and chooses the shows that he wants to do and the festivals that he wants to do. But you know, it's a family affair. You know, him and his brothers. And, you know, of course, the dead Lonnie Brooks, legendary Lonnie Brooks, you know, like I did, paved the way, set the foundation for them. And they both doing some good things. But yeah, Wayne, he's got his twist on blues. You know, he incorporates, you know, some hip hop,
some more
things.
Modern sounds.
Yeah. So he's got some good things going on. I enjoy working with him.
Well, also, you work with our mutual friend, Jerry Hunt. What?
Oh, Jerry. Yeah.
And can you talk about, because, you know, Jerry, he goes way back and does some of these old-timey tunes. And,
right.
You know, I saw you guys, he did a song by the Cupcakes, you know. Seems to be some real fun material that Jerry does, right?
No, I love Jerry. I think I met him, I don't know, I think while we were still doing the Sunday Night Jam,
mm-hmm.
6-7 years ago, I guess, he moved out here. I believe from Rockford.
Okay.
And so he started coming when he moved in the community. He started coming to the jam night, and he started playing over at the Coach Light in Chesterton. Chesterton there. Yeah, and he said he was doing the one-man band thing. Mm-hmm. And I went out there, and man, he was playing. I mean, he had the guitar and an old contraption drum set he had set up and harmonica, but he had that old school Muddy Waters Jimmy Reed sound down. And I just like, man, this is exactly what we need.
Sure.
And we, you know, we just kind of hooked up a little bit over time. And I got back into my upright bass plan. And he was a big help in me getting back into playing upright. And we started doing some things, maybe just two piece. Yeah, just two piece. Mm-hmm. And every now and then we do some things with my brother Ralph. I play with us. He plays, you know, some brushes, and depends on the set. Yeah. But yeah, I give him big props for helping me get back into playing my upright bass. I'm excited at the chance every time we get a chance to play. I wish we could play, you know, a lot more, but he's busy now with Corey Dennison.
Yeah.
Any opportunity I get a chance to play with him, I go for it. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna go.
think Jerry said they did 304 shows last year.
Oh, it's crazy, man. You know? Crazy.
You've been there, done that, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things, I guess you do it while you can, because you can't continue at that pace. And you know, you get you either going to recycle the places that you plan all the time, especially if you're not really traveling.
Sure.
So that means you like doing a lot of the same gigs over and over and stuff, the same places. And at some point, you're going to have to kind of break out of that, or else you're going to go down that same old, you know, okay, kind of thing. And
sure.
But then again, you know, you look at the economics, and Jerry's a smart guy and stuff. So he's like, man, you know, to get on the road and go here and go there and stuff. But you kind of got to do that at least once or twice in your career. You just can't stay wherever in Chicago or if you want to grow. You gotta get out and do some tours other places. But that's a hard pace to keep though, 300 something gigs. I mean, you know,
that's a young man's game.
That's a young man's game.
Well, you know, out of all the years that you've been performing, you have traveled overseas. You guys have been in Tokyo and in Australia and Finland and, you know, all around. Well, are there any certain highlights from some of those tours?
Oh, yeah. I think one of the first tours we did was over to Switzerland. I enjoyed playing over there. I think that's one of the first times I met Jerry Porter. He was playing with Buddy and Junior.
Okay.
And that was before the new wave of success for Buddy, before Downright I Got the Blues came out.
Yeah.
And we did several shows with them over there. That was like 86, 87, I believe. We did Montrose Jazz Fest. That was definitely a big highlight. So many. And touring over there at that time, you pretty much did concerts. It's a handful of, you know, bars or clubs, but mostly big theaters, and it's, you know, people be quiet, they sit, you do your show, and then they applaud. And really some of the best shows of my career was over there. But also here in the States, though, I mean, we did the San Francisco Blues Festival, one of the last ones they held. That was in 85. You know, we used to go out in Colorado, do Telluride Blues and Jazz Festival. Man, it's so many. Up in Seattle, we used to go up in Seattle, do the Bomber Shoot Festival. It's been some great festivals and cities and stuff that had the blessing to go and perform at and stuff. You know, like you said, Australia, you know, Japan, Brazil, you know, all over Europe, Warsaw, Poland, you know, back when it was, I guess you call it the Iron Curtain or whatever, when things
were communism.
It was really restrictive. But, you know, music has been good to me, man. I've been, like I said, blessed to travel all over the world, see different people, meet different people, different cultures, learn things, bring it back, you know. So I'm happy thus far, but, you know, we still got some more chapters to write.
And when you were on these tours and these big concerts, I mean, you were getting, like, rock star treatment, right? I mean,
you know, even back then, when you go over, and I've heard things have changed, but during that time though, we didn't have to like be low in our equipment. You was on a bus, one show. It was not, you know, playing from 10 to 2 in the morning and all that kind of stuff. It was just great. It's like you say, rock star treatment. But I've heard now, though, that some of that has changed now.
Back to carrying your own stuff.
Back to carrying.
Driving the bus.
Back in the, cramped up in the van and stuff, you know. And a lot of times now, the European, because of economics, you know, they'll pick the lead singer or the front man in the band and bring fly him over and put some, you know, some
backup band behind him.
Band behind him and stuff. And, you know, it's, you know, I understand it from an economic standpoint, the front man, well, I got a chance to make some money. But these people, they either hurt you or seen you hurt your record with your band.
Right.
And think that, okay, we're going to duplicate that same sound, you know, with some backing guys over there or whatever. And it's never the same. It's never the same.
Yeah, but seeing Donald with a bunch of guys we never met versus with you guys, it's going to be big difference.
I've heard it, but I just kind of like, you know, for the guys that's doing the backing tracks, like, yeah, I'm backing up Don Kinsey and stuff, and they playing my songs and stuff, you know.
They studied your bass line.
So, you know, and with Kinsey, we all write, you know, a lot of the songs, you know, some came from me, some came from Ralph, some came from Don. We all worked on them together and stuff. So when you see that, it's like, okay, you know, but just, man, that's how, unfortunately or fortunately for some people, that's how the business is nowadays. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you were talking before about doing a show and whether you rehearsed or not rehearsed, I had heard stories especially working with your father, mm-hmm. that he was just a really sort of a hard taskmaster. You got to get it right. And you guys would record all the rehearsals and study the rehearsals.
I mean,
so do you think that's a good, big part of how it made you guys so tight?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it was at one point, you know, everybody in the band was required to bring a recorder to the rehearsal and study. Because, you know, we might have rehearsed, depending on what was going on.
Yeah.
We might rehearse multiple nights, but, you know, you just come in and learn your parts, and then when we came back to rehearsal, it was expected for you to know what was going on. And I guess back in the day, though, my dad and some of the older guys, they had a practice that they would turn out all the lights in the basement. So and you had to run through a song, so it was pitch dark. You couldn't see the fretboard.
You couldn't look.
Yeah. So you really had to know where you was going. Those things that you knew what you made you tight. But and even now though, when we do and say we're gonna run over something new or we're gonna incorporate another line or something on the song, I bring my recorder, man, you know, because everybody, you know, you want to think, oh, I got it, I can remember it, and get on the bandstand and, like, what happened, dude?
Sure.
You know, so, but I'm always one for bringing my recorder, and if I need to, I study it. And sometimes if you do that, maybe you don't need to rehearse as often because you got your part. You got your notes, you know.
Yeah.
Right there, especially with everybody being spread out sometime nowadays. You know, a lot of times everybody, you know, back in the day, most of the guys doing the band kind of stayed, you know, in the same town or whatever. But now, you know, Andy's in Michigan and, you know, everybody different places and stuff. So, you know, you just can't like say, you know, hey, you know, we're going to rehearse just randomly. You just like,
well, you got to plan and make arrangements.
You know? Yeah. And so, you know, and with Andy, for us in the Kinsey reports, like, you know, if we're going to work on something new, I try to give him a heads up. Hey, Andy, study this particular song so that when we rehearse in 3 days from now, you know, you got a heads up on it and stuff so we can get the most out of the rehearsal and not just like playing records and learning a part on that. Then it's just a wasted day or whatever. So, you know, you pre-plan and stuff and, you know, you kind of get tight that way. Hopefully everybody takes their notes, whatever. And I kind of leave it up to everybody to do their own thing. If you got your memory like that, that's cool. As long as you got it, you know. So, but if it come time to perform it and you don't have it, then now you're going to do it my way and stuff.
Yeah. You're going to get that look on the bandstand.
Yeah. I tried. You said you was cool, you know, but that didn't work, so.
Well, at some point, you know, when you guys were sort of the young lions on the music scene, mm-hmm. they talked about, you know, the future of the blues, mm-hmm. you know, because there was, you know, people like you guys or even, you know, talk about Wayne Brooks or Ronnie Baker Brooks. Mm-hmm. We're all getting a little bit older now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just what do you think about the future of the blues?
You know, that we were speaking about that. We had Christmas dinner at my brother's house, and some kind of way we got to talking about record sales, and it'd be interesting to see, compare our record sales from in the 80s to, say, what Toronzo is doing now. He's like the, you know, the new Alligator, you know, star.
Sure.
And see what his numbers are now, because we constantly talking about how records are or not selling now. And so, but we was talking about, kind of brought him up, because he's kind of like the new hot thing, you know, if you want to say.
Rising star.
Rising star on Alligator. And I think everybody's still searching for that next blues. I mean, you know, we keep saying now that after Buddy passed, who's going to fall
sure.
to? Who's going to fall to? And but I think with blues, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think you got a lot of artists, guitar players, whatever, that love blues money, but they don't always want to play blues or always want to be labeled as a blues artist.
Right.
But they want everything that comes along with being a blues artist. And I think that's where people are trying to define themselves. You know, everybody wants to do, you know, they look down at just a 1-4-5 progression. You know, you want to play everything that you can do to try to get it far away from the blues, but call it blues.
Still be blues, yeah.
Still be blues. And I think there's a fine line between being creative and you know, staying to the art form, you know, the root of it. And I think some artists, you know, walk that line good and musically, but sometimes when I just hear them speak, I was like, you know, why you want to talk down about the blues? But yet, this is where you make your money. This is where
you
make your living.
Yeah,
you know, don't talk down to it and stuff. And that's why sometimes I believe people have this notion that the blues is dying, because they want to say, well, you know, I just don't play blues. I play everything. Well, and that's true for all of us. I mean, I'll say for myself that I'll be 55. God's will, I'll be 55 in January. And for the last 35 years, I've been playing blues. Now, I play other things. I incorporate other genres into my blues. But at the end of the day, I play blues. You know, I'm not trying to be a jazz dude. I'm not trying to be, you know, a funk dude. You know, I may incorporate some of that into what I do. But at the end of the day, I'm a blues guy.
Feeling you, that's why all of my life I'll be singing the blues. Born into this world, I didn't make the rules. Somebody tell me who's gonna teach me the golden rules. I don't understand why there's people living in the streets and eating out of garbage cans. Being a man means nothing unless you're willing to take a stand. Take a look around you. Keep on doing the best you can. Living my life.
singing these blues.
That's where I'm at my age. Now, maybe you 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I was in my 20s, maybe I was, you know, man, I want just rock it up or whatever.
Yeah.
That's da-da-da-da-da and stuff. But now, that's where I'm at. And I think at some point in your life, in your career, I mean, and I've heard Willie Big Eyes Pimp say, you know, I've done during the span of my career, I've had many jobs, but blues and music has always been my career. And I kind of feel that same way. You know, during the course of a pandemic, we've all had to do different things just to make it, to survive.
Sure.
But, you know, music and blues is my career and my livelihood, my life. And I plan on, as long as I choose to continue, I continue to play blues. And I mean, I tell everybody, I said, man, I've been doing this too long now to do anything else. I mean, you know, I can't change up now and stuff, you know.
Just who you are.
Yeah, just because something else may be popular and stuff,
yeah.
You know. So I'm going to ride it out. I'm going to ride it out the rest of my life.
I'm
and
sure.
Try to do better. And not to say that we need to just continue to recycle Muddy Waters and B.B. King over and over. We got to, you know.
Music has to evolve.
We have to evolve. We have to make it evolve. You know, don't get me wrong. Because the next generation of people that's coming up, you know, they need something new and fresh to hear. And that's probably why if we do some of the old songs, we put our own spin on it. But I find sometime, though, that when I do an old song and I do it the traditional way, that's a lot of times people like getting back to that, because sometimes we gonna went so far out in left field.
Yeah.
You know, that
is, people respond to it because it's back to the roots.
Back to the roots. So I kind of make sure I keep my eye on the root, man, and not get too far out in left field to where I'm trying to be so different that it ain't even what it is no more and stuff. So. But I think the blues, the future of the blues, is in good hands. I plan and I look forth to being a part of the future. And I say that for my brothers and I, Kinsley Report, as well as Mojo Daddy, that Jerry Hunt and everybody else that I work with, Wayne Baker Brooks, we all look forth to being a part of the future of the blues. And I think the thing about that umbrella of artists that I just mentioned is that we all know the root. We all come from the root. We sons of blues men, and or we don't just, you know, we come from the background of artists that play, you know, the old school stuff. So we know. Now, whether we do it or not, that's one thing. But we know. It's not like we didn't wasn't taught the blues, the real blues that, you know, our forefathers played. So I think with that being said, I think I can speak for people that I'm associated with, that we the blues is going to be in good hands, and we're looking forward to keeping the art form going.
I like the idea. You keep your eye on the root.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got to keep your eye on the root and stuff. Cause you can listen to this person, that person, and let the, also, you know, you can't let the audience dictate to you what to do. You know, people want to hear, and sometimes I go to some places, and I could even say Kingston Mines, and me and you both remember, you know, that was strict blues over there. And some nights I go over there and I hear some artists, and they playing everything except blues. You know, I mean, it's almost like 70s R&B has become the new blues now. And I think it's strictly because the people that cater to these clubs now, a lot of times, they just want to drink, jump around, and dance, and that's what they react to a lot of times. And so, you know, some of the artists play that, you know.
But the blues is not Mustang Sally. Right?
Yeah. You know, and so you can get caught up into that. And sometimes, you know, my brother Don, and he's good at pulling back on that. I give him credit for that. Sometimes, you know, people, they all jacked up and stuff, and they just want to, you know. And sometimes we just play a slow blues, you know, to that crowd up there. And, you know, and they react in a good way because it's like, man, you know, this is real blues now and stuff, you know, versus just constantly playing, you know.
Disco beats.
Right. Yeah, you know, Billie Jean and all that kind of stuff, you know, which I don't have no problem with. But, you know, it's
supposed to be a blues club.
It's supposed to be a blues club, and you go there to, you know, to hear blues artists and stuff. You know,
and I think, just, like you said, there's a fine line because – every generation, you know, has different influences. I mean, mm-hmm. even the music that the Kids Report made was different from your father's music.
Right.
And correct. Then the kids coming up now, they grew up and they listen to some different things.
Yeah.
So it's going to impact the music. But I think the point that you made is you got to keep your eye on the root.
Yeah.
You can help it evolve and do whatever you want to do to it.
Right.
But it's still got to stay with that root because that's what's in the ground.
Yep. Yep. That's it, man.
Yeah. So, what do you say we make some music?
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's do it. All right. Honeybee, sail home, sail on, sail on, my little honeybee, sail on. I don't mind you sailing, but don't you please, woman, don't you sail so long. Thank you. honeybee. I hear a lot of buzzing, yeah. Well, you know it sound like my little honeybee. Here we go, y'all. You know she been all around the world making honey, but now she's coming back home to me.
Yeah. All right. That's old school.